You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 437 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this Thursday evening into Friday morning. There's football on, but it's basketball season, at least in the very, very near future. Training camp is less than 2 weeks away, and there's a lot going on. And sort of on the precipice of that, Jeff Siegel is on the podcast today, joining me to talk about all things with the rotation. So what's going on, Jeff?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, man, just living the dream. You know, we talked a little bit before we started recording, and we're almost there, man. I was just writing a big thing over at Dime Mag for sort of the tiers of the NBA, and like started to do some like season preview content. There's lots of stuff going up at Peachtree Hoops. Like, we're doing this whole player preview series, and we did some roundtable stuff, and it feels like the season is almost here, which is kind of weird, but it's also just the reality that next Monday is media day, and that's like, you know, 11 days away. Like, we're kind of here.
Yeah, we're getting really close. I'm excited about it. I've still got some stuff I'm trying to crank out before the season starts. But other than that, I mean, I'm just ready to get back into the games and get back into watching stuff every night.
Yeah, it would be nice to have basketball on, I will say. Like, we've had a couple of, at least I've had a couple of, like, little appetizer kind of things. I know you were watching a ton of WNBA recently. I watched a decent amount of that. I watched all of the, like, prospect-laden college teams that were, like, doing traveling. So, like, Kentucky and Duke played some games, and that was kind of, like, what's the appetite? But until we actually see some NBA basketball, it's nothing's quite the same. So, you know, media day, I'm looking forward to it, and then camps the next day after that. So we're almost there. But we have sort of a big agenda to tackle today. I'm actually shamelessly ripping this off from good friends of you and I. Kevin Chouinard and Tyler Jones did this a couple of weeks ago on their podcast, kind of going through the rotation. Not that it was some innovative thing to go through the rotation, but that was what inspired me. And I reached out to you probably 2 weeks ago and said, hey, we got to do this at some point, kind of just dive through all of the players, not necessarily, you know, deep dives on every single guy on the roster, but going through and kind of what's going to happen on this team on a nightly basis, because, you know, eventually teams settle into their 10, 11 man rotation, and then guys kind of disappear. But on this team, it might come and go quite a bit. And in keeping with that, the Hawks already have an injury that they're dealing with. It was announced, I guess, last week that Dwayne Debbin was in a walking boot. He's now out of that per a Hawks announcement earlier this week, in which they said that he'll be now reevaluated in 2 more weeks. He's now out of the walking boot and has some weight-bearing rehab going on here. But that's sort of a good place to dive in here, because if you go by that timeline, he won't even be reevaluated until after training camp starts, which could place him in some peril when it comes to starting the season. So that's not that big of a deal right now, but it is a good place to start. And just kind of what happens if Dwayne Debman is not available in October? How do the Hawks handle that, and how do they also handle things when they're at full strength?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big person who's going to sort of step into that role is Alex Len. He's going to just step right into that starting center role, you know, a place where he's been in his career before in Phoenix, and something that he can do. You know, it's certainly, you know, the fit between he and John Collins is going to be heavily reliant on John Collins' ability to space the floor a little bit. I mean, certainly the two of them together, If Collins doesn't have that corner jump shot that I think everybody sort of is hoping that he'll come back this year with, you know, that's going to be a tough spacing conundrum for the Hawks to solve. Obviously, you know, they've got, you know, big problems this year just in general on a talent front, but just, you know, as a fit together, two big men, Collins and Len, you know, just don't seem to fit together as far as we know what Collins' game looks like. You know, Debman, you know, sort of he got that floor spacing ability last year, was able to step out to the corners, was really, you know, able to step out to beyond even above the break. They were running plays for him to get threes. Like, he really showed that he can space the floor. Alex Len probably can't do that. I mean, I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say Alex Len's not going to be a shooter this year. So that's going to be up to John Collins in those Collins Len lineups where with Debman out at the beginning of the year, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of buzz that Len could be working on his jump shot. He talked about that in the offseason and at his sort of welcome interview with the press over the summer. But as you kind of mentioned there, that's more of a theoretical. Of course, I said the same thing last year about Dwayne Dedman, and then he made shots, which is more of a rarity than something you actually bank on. But I think Len might take some jumpers. I'm not sure how much of those he's going to make. We will definitely see. But, I mean, long term, it looks like Dedman's going to be okay. It's just a situation where it's kind of interesting to think about what it looks like without him, because, you know, listen, injuries happen along the way. It's sort of one of the themes of this podcast, is that I think fans especially kind of just look at things like in the perfect world scenario of which guys are healthy all season, which is nice. It does happen occasionally where a team will sort of avoid major injuries, but for the most part, something's going to happen along the way, even if it's just a 2 or 3 game absence. You kind of have to think about how the Hawks will sort of paper over that. And without Dedman, if you take him away for any length of time, they have, you know, 2 quality bigs in Len and Collins, but after that it gets kind of dismal in a hurry. And even when Dedman is healthy, there are some questions as well. So I think we know healthy Dedman and Collins will be the starters, and then you're talking about Len as your primary backup center. But what happens after that? Like, what happens with Amari Spellman? What happens with Miles Plumlee? And then if you figure that Collins is now your starting power forward, who might play some center as well, because he, of course, has the ability to do that in some small ball lineups. What happens with the rest of those minutes? Like, I don't think you're going to see 96 minutes a game between Dedman, Len, and Collins at the 4 and 5. So what happens to the rest of those minutes?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'd go with Spellman, you know, right off the bat, even if, you know, we both have our reservations about how he's going to be as an NBA player. But I think he's got more. They've got more, obviously, of an investment in him than they do a guy like Miles Plumlee or really any of the other sort of options that they would have. Those are really the two sort of main options to play, you know, one of the big man spots. They can always go small with a guy like Taurean Prince at the 4, or even, you know, two-way guy Alex Poythress. They could even try to trot out Vince Carter at the 4 just to do it. I think Spellman and Plumlee are sort of the main, you know, those guys are going to compete for that 4th big spot. And, you know, I would tap Spellman as the guy at the beginning of the season, just because, you know, he offers a little bit more of that floor spacing playmaking element that you really need from one of your 2 big men, you know, at all times. You really want to have, that's what we were just talking about with Collins and Len. If neither one of them are really outside shooters, that pairing is going to get a little bit tough. You pair either one of those 2 with Miles Plumlee and the spacing's not getting any better. But if you pair either one of them with what Spellman could be, what he, you know, what his skill set should be as an offensive player, at least it makes sense that Spellman would be able to, you know, spread the floor. He can even, you know, make plays a little bit as a secondary playmaker, sort of. And then, you know, either Collins or Len is more of your inside big man rather than your outside big man.
Yeah, I think in general, I would always lean toward giving minutes to someone that you're invested in. And Spellman is that guy. I mean, I didn't love that draft pick. We talked about that a lot at the time. And after that, I don't think he'll be very good right away. Most rookies are bad, something that I will always say. And Spellman, as a number 30 overall pick, the baseline's even lower for that kind of player. But with that said, this is a team that's not trying to necessarily win this season, so I would always default to playing the rookie if it was me, especially if the other option is to just kind of let him languish, because if you're not playing him, I'd rather kind of see a guy in the G League than not playing at all, especially for someone with that kind of investment, that kind of pedigree, and his youth. I think you want him playing somewhere. So if Spellman's not playing in Atlanta, he needs to be in Erie for the most part, in my opinion. So I would lean there as well. I do think I would probably play more small ball than most would, just because I think Spellman's going to be bad, frankly. if the choices are Spellman or Plumlee, and those are the only 2 options, I would certainly be playing Spellman for all the reasons I just said. With that said, though, with that out of the way, I would rather go small more often. I mean, you mentioned Poythress, who obviously will only be around when he's around because he's a 2-way guy, but, you know, Vince Carter, Justin Anderson, Taurean Prince, those guys can all fake it at the 4. I've always wanted to see more of Taurean at the 4. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he always has some length that you would see. And look, if you look around the league, as I know you know, a lot of teams are going with guys who are that kind of size at the 4 in small ball lineups. Justin Anderson is even shorter than Prince, but is probably stronger, definitely more of like a burly kind of guy. And Vince Carter would certainly be more of a perimeter option, but he has that sort of old man, he knows how to do it kind of thing. So those guys, I'd like to see any of those guys in some small ball lineups at the 4 Knowing full well that defensively you're going to have some issues probably if you try to do that, and especially against bigger lineups. But I think there's some good experimentation to do. Bud famously did not love playing small ball. He really liked to play two traditional bigs the great majority of the time when that was available to him. And when he had Paul Millsap and Al Horford, it was very, very nice because those guys kind of can do both. But I would be leaning towards playing small, especially if Lloyd Pierce follows through on the fact that he wants to play really fast, which is what he's been saying since he was hired. If that actually happens, then you're going to want to play fast. And, you know, Miles Plumlee, for as much of the fact that I think he actually is an NBA player and can be useful, I think I'd certainly lean toward either Spellman or small ball before I would turn to Plumlee.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting to see sort of how much small ball they're going to play, you know, just because they don't, you know, like you said, Taurean can sort of fake it at the four. He's probably the best option of the wings who can sort of play up a position. You know, Anderson, of course, has the strength, and Carter, you know, just doesn't have the foot speed to be a wing. So you sort of have to throw him at the four when he does play. But I think, you know, if Spellman can show sort of anything, and I guess I've come around a little bit more on his game in the last few weeks, just sort of thinking about, you know, what he's going to be asked to do. Obviously, maybe not obviously, but I think defensively he will be, you know, a bit of a sore spot for the team. But I don't, you know, they're not going to be good on that end anyway. Like, it's not, you know, I don't think that they're planning on being an all world defensive team. It's really, you know, how does he fit offensively? And I think, you know, it's sort of, you can see him, you know, making sense as sort of more of a perimeter based big man who can play a little bit with the ball in his hands, who can shoot from outside. You know, the offense sort of clicks it with him playing one of the big man spots. I don't really care whether you define him as the four or the five. You know, that doesn't really matter. When he and Collins are out there, Spellman is really going to be more of the four, because he's going to be more perimeter oriented, and then Collins would be more of the vertical spacer at the five position.
Yeah, I do think there's sort of a misnomer. I don't want to go too deep on this, but at least in our comment section and on Twitter recently in the last couple of weeks, and really since the draft pick, I think people kind of think that Spellman is this like defense first grinder kind of guy. I think that's not true. He's a much better offensive prospect right now than he is a defensive prospect. I know he plays hard and he has this nice motor and this really competitive spirit, and I think people assume that means you're a good defender. He's not a good defender right now. I think most rookies are bad defensively anyway, but he's coming from a lower baseline than I think people actually realize. So early on, Spellman will almost certainly be better offensively than he is defensively. I have something just worth pointing out, and I think we talked about that, you and I, offline a lot, but there's just this like thing hanging out there and some of the fan base that like thinks he's going to be some like defense first stopper, and I don't see that as a possibility, even much less a likelihood early on. I mean, obviously, guys, as they're, you know, as we saw with Taurean Prince 2 years ago, if you just kind of turn guys loose and have them play defense as their primary thing, they can kind of play up there, versus last year when we saw Prince kind of settle in more as this like offense first player. I think Spellman, if he's just flying around, can be at least somewhat effective if he's just, you know, kind of killing himself defensively. But in the grand scheme, he doesn't really know what he's doing yet defensively, and he was really kind of a weakness at times for Villanova at the defensive end last year. So I think that's just something to point out, that defensively, as you mentioned in there, it's not going to be great with him right away.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. I think he, you know, he can get there. He has sort of the it's hard to even really explain, because he doesn't look like, when you know, just when you watched him at Villanova, or even when you look at him in summer league, you don't see somebody who's clearly, you know, like in the greatest defensive shape in terms of just like body build and stuff like that. But, you know,
and he's not, by the way. He's got at least 30 more pounds to lose. I mean, credit to him, he lost a lot of weight at Villanova and is definitely in better shape now. But I think everyone's kind of talked about that, whether it be, you know, as frankly as they could have or not. Spellman's got to get in better shape. It's even visible. Like, for him to be the kind of player that they want him to be, even offensively, playing as much on the perimeter as he probably will, he's going to have to get in better shape. That's just kind of what it is.
Yeah, he's definitely going to have to get in better shape, especially if he is going to play more four, more perimeter-based defense. He does have some semblance of like quick feet and sort of, you know, can get down in a stance and shifts laterally decently well. But of course, you know, taking off another 20, 25, 30 pounds would help him in that way as well. So, you know, he's definitely not a finished product, obviously, as coming in as a rookie. And you can sort of see a long-term future for him as sort of a playmaker and a floor spacer and somebody who can defend fours and defend a little bit in pick and roll with his lateral mobility. And, you know, it's there. There's a ceiling that is clearly an NBA player. But whether we'll, you know, I would expect that we will not see that ceiling in year one, and we will not, you know, we may never see that ceiling, really.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's that kind of player that you're outlining there is what the Hawks are seeing in Spellman. It's this guy who can shoot it and handle the ball a little bit, make some quality decisions if he's put in the right decision in the right place to make those decisions, and then defensively get in better shape, kind of fly around, use his motor, and be that kind of potential two-way guy. But there's a lot of potential in there. I will emphasize that word a lot because he's not there yet, obviously, as most rookies are not. Quickly, before we move off the big men, Plumlee's been a topic of concern, at least in my mentions and other places, since we've written about him a few times over the summer. I think he is a player that is only going to play if there is an injury. Like, for instance, if Dwayne Dedman didn't make it back for the regular season's opener, I'm not saying that it's even possible or likely that's going to happen, but over the course of the season, someone's going to get hurt. And at that point in time, maybe you look at Plumlee, especially if it's Dedman or Len that you lose, because they may not want to just send Collins back to that, you know, bruising center role. I'm not really sure what they see in that. But I think Plumlee, that's the only time that you're probably going to see him, at least on a regular basis, if you get an injury. Do you feel the same way as I do about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I sat down and really did the rotation of, like, these guys are going to play these minutes and these are going to be my lineups throughout the game, like I like to do, Plumlee was not in the rotation at all. He's just, unless somebody gets injured, he's the fifth big guy. And, you know, there's really not, you know, not a place for a fifth big man in today's league. Obviously, people get hurt. That's why you have depth. That's why you play and have, you know, 15 to 17 guys on a roster, because not, you know, obviously not everybody plays every night. But Plumlee, you know, it certainly wouldn't even surprise me if he were inactive most nights if there are, you know, if all four big men are healthy. But I would not have him in the rotation at all at the beginning of the year if everybody's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't blow me away if he was, I don't know. It wouldn't stun me if he was ahead of Spellman early on. I'm not sure what Lloyd Pierce is going to do. If this team was coached by Mike Budenholzer, I would be projecting Plumlee as the fourth big coming out of the season, because that was just Bud. Bud did not like to play rookies. With Pierce, I think that's probably going to be more acceptable for him to go ahead and play the young guys. But I'm with you 100% on that. I just think that, I mean, there's even this notion out there, and I guess I should ask you about that too, that Plumlee should just be, like, sent home for 2 years, like almost cut, or maybe not stretched, but like sent away, because if they have these other options, like if they wanted to keep Thomas Robinson or Cole Aldridge or something else, or just clear a roster spot. I've been resistant to that, because I think it's just something that doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I think if you could try to find someone who's better than Plumlee available, you might be able to. But the difference between that guy that you can find right now on the scrap heap and Plumlee is not worth the notion of just sending a guy home for 2 years and $25 million. That's just my opinion. But what do you make of the, I guess, theoretical that he may not even be around? Because that's something people keep asking me about. I keep telling them it's not probably going to happen. But because the Hawks went out and signed these two guys in Aldridge and Robinson for training camp, people want to assume that there's like some sort of battle going on there.
Yeah, I would very much... you know, I would not think that he would be cut, that he would be sent home, that either one of those guys would make the team over a guy like Plumlee. They may make the team over somebody else, who we'll probably get to in a minute here. But I think Plumlee, you know, if people sort of have trouble with this, and we've had multiple players on the Hawks over the last few years where this sort of applied, just because a guy is overpaid does not mean that he's absolutely useless. He's not, you know, not everybody is Joakim Noah, where he's paid $18 million and is worth nothing. You know, Miles Plumlee at $12.5 million is not a good contract, but we know that he can play. He can step in, you know, and play the, you know, the Alex Len role if Len went down, or if Len gets elevated because Deadman's out, then he can play, you know, he can step up and be, you know, the third big. You know, he's probably right now a better player than Omari Spellman. He's probably right, you know, he should on merit be the fourth big man in this rotation, but based on fit and based on the investment that they have in Spellman and based on just where they are as a franchise, I would imagine that Spellman should, you know, will play the majority of those fourth big minutes, just in case that they need him. Then Plumlee is sitting there in the way that he can play sort of that vertical spacing role. He can be an athlete you know, I don't expect to see a ton of him this year, but, you know, he's still useful. And I think that's something that, that people sort of lose when they think of a guy who's completely overpaid like Plumlee is.
Yeah, he would be in the league somewhere. That's kind of my baseline. Like, would Plumlee get a minimum contract somewhere? And the answer is yes, I think. I'm pretty sure about that. So it's not like he would just be completely out of the league if he was not under contract for a lot of money. And other than that, I agree with you on all of that stuff. Okay, we can move off of that. We talked a little bit about the guys who might be playing some small ball 4 minutes, but there's this, like, I guess you can combine it into this almost logjam at the small forward and shooting guard spots. We know the starters are going to be Torian Prince and Kent Bazemore, barring some absolute stunning revelation or an injury. Those guys are definitely written in pen. But after that, it's a lot of moving parts. I think Vince Carter is very useful, but how much do they want to play Vince Carter? Justin Anderson's a guy I like a lot. How much do they want to play him? So let's just start at small forward, which is also sort of a hybrid four, as we talked about before. Like, who is Torian Prince's primary backup right now? Because I'm not sure that we know. I think there are options, but it's kind of funny because something that they haven't had in a long time are legitimate small forward size players, and now they have three or four of them.
Yeah, I think it's... You know, I think it's better to, just like the big guys, where you sort of just combine the four and the five together and be like, all right, which two big guys play together well? You know, one guy spaces the floor, one guy is more of a vertical spacer in the middle of the floor. I think the same sort of thing applies to the wings, where a guy like Justin Anderson is, you know, not an offensive player. He just can't. I mean, he's just awful on that end of the floor, but he's a really solid defender. And then you get a guy like Kevin Huerter, who's probably going to come in as a poor defender, but has some upside on that side of the floor. But it can be a secondary playmaker and a floor spacer. So those two guys seem to work well together. Bazemore and Prince, like we talked about, are sort of set in stone as the two starters, unless something weird happens there. But, you know, I think Anderson and Huerter are the backup wings in my mind. If we're in those bench lineups, when Bazemore and Prince are both out at the beginning of the second and fourth quarters, I expect to see Anderson and Huerter fill those roles.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a surprise to me. Huerter's the same way I think about Spellman, where I would absolutely be playing Huerter because, as we mentioned before with Spellman, they have every investment in Kevin Huerter. His is almost weirder in some ways because he didn't play summer league and he was not nearly as prominent of a college player as Spellman. Didn't really have the reps at the same level that Spellman had when he was playing, you know, for national titles and all that fun stuff. But Huerter is a guy who also has a higher investment, being a top 20 pick and someone who I think is a much better prospect than Amari Spellman. So he should be in the mix. I agree with you. And I will say he's much more of a shooting guard at this point, at this moment in time. I know he's kind of long. I think, he's 6'7 or so. He's not strong right now. He's going to have to get a lot stronger. And as a result of that, trying to have Kevin Huerter guard some of the threes around the league would not go well. I think he actually has some reasonable defensive upside, but not right now. He's going to have to get a lot stronger positionally. I think he has pretty good length, but he's definitely going to be a guy you're going to have to kind of hide a little bit defensively early on. I agree that those could be the two best wings that you have behind Prince and Bazemore. I do think the Vince Carter element is interesting because I think if you just went on pure guys I trust to be good at basketball, Vince is a lot higher than some guys on this bench. With that said, I just don't know what they want to do with Vince Carter. I don't know what he wants to do. I know what he's saying. He says he still wants to play. He said he came to Atlanta expecting to play. At the same time, this guy's 40 plus years old, and he signed a contract with a team that he knows is not going to be very good. I can't imagine he has any other illusion. Are they going to play? Is Vince going to be available every night? Is he going to be someone that the Hawks want to play? Is he going to be healthy enough to play? Is he also just over the hill? I think we've seen him play well in the last couple of years, but with every year you get up at an age, once you get over 40, the fall can be pretty precipitous. So there's a lot of different moving parts there. Him and Anderson's kind of its own battle, in my opinion, because those guys are the two that have enough size to maybe even play some four, as we mentioned before, and credibly guard small forwards. All the other wings are probably too small to do that. I mean, there's guys who could probably fake it like DeAndre Bembry can, maybe even Daniel Hamilton. But those two guys are definitely the primary competitors to back up Torian Prince if you were just going down the backup three realm, even though I definitely agree with you that it's all about pairings. You know, wings are kind of interchangeable. Defensively, you got to have guys who can – somebody's got to be able to guard the opposing three, especially if the opposing team has a primary player like LeBron or Paul George or Kevin Durant, somebody like that. You have someone that can actually play defense against those guys. But in general, the wings are sort of interchangeable, so it's probably good to talk about it in that way. I just think Vince is an interesting one. There's obviously a lot of guys who are interchangeable and interesting story-wise, but Vince is one that I have no read on right now because I just don't know how much they want to play him, how much he wants to play.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, for me, if I were in charge of things, obviously I'm not, and Vince probably wouldn't have been on the team if I had sort of been in charge of this. I think I'd rather take a flyer on a younger guy who can play that same role. But I think Vince will probably log more minutes for NBA TV than he will for the Hawks. I just don't see him as unless all hell breaks loose on the injury front. But looking at the current roster as it is, he's probably the 15th guy for me. You know, I think.
I mean, right. I don't agree. Just from an ability standpoint, the question is, and I said this a little bit before, but what was the conversation between Vince and Travis Schlenk and Lloyd Pierce before he signed? That is what we don't know. At least we don't have the actual answer. Sam Meredith, our colleague at Peachtree Crisp, was on site when Vince did the introductory press conference. Vince said all the right things, but what's the actual baseline? What was the conversation there? Is it Vince, we're going to play you, please come, and we want you to lead by example? Or is it Vince, we'll play you as little as you want to play, and we just want you to be that clubhouse leader kind of guy? I'm not sure. I tend to agree with you that I don't think he's going to play a whole lot, but maybe early in the year they look at Vince and say, look, you're better than some of these guys, so we're going to have you play for a while until either you show us that you're not capable of playing, or if you break down, or somebody else is ready to go, et cetera. But I think in October, it wouldn't surprise me if Vince was in the rotation. It wouldn't stun me. I'm not projecting that necessarily, but I think if you asked me who I want to win a basketball game right now, Vince Carter or Daniel Hamilton, or Vince Carter or Tyler Dorsey, I'm taking Vince Carter. But that doesn't mean anything because long-term, it's obviously not going to be Vince Carter hanging around Atlanta as a player for very long. So it's kind of all about what you want if you were the Hawks, and what you want if you're Carter makes it hard to answer for us. So I think there's a scenario where you're right and Vince, you know, by the time you get to December and January, we just kind of know he's never going to play, or he's in the rotation until he's not. And that'll be interesting too. So it's very, very unsettled in my opinion, even if the Hawks, I'm sure, have a better idea of it than we do.
Yeah, I think from the outside, of course, like you said, we have no idea what Vince was promised, what Vince wanted when he signed. If he was promised, yes, you will have a role until it's clear that even a guy like Kevin Huerter is better than you. Like, I wouldn't.
Well, they could also trade Vince midseason, or they could have an agreement with Vince that says, all right, Vince, we want you to come around and we'll buy you out in January. Like, it could be something like that too, where if Vince feels like he can play, and listen, he said repeatedly at his press conference that he thinks he can play still. If he wants to be able to like contribute to a winning team, it's not going to be in Atlanta. So maybe there's some agreement there that they would look to trade him, or they look to buy him out and cut him loose. It kind of goes to what we're saying already, but I just have no idea. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's clear that he can still play because he's been a solid player for the last few years, and there's no indication that he was either hurt over the summer or is any way going to break down. Obviously, you wouldn't want to start him and give him a ton of minutes, but there is, there's no indication that he's a bad player. I think if we were just literally going through the whole rotation on merit, who are the best players, he's in the rotation, especially early on until Kevin Huerter or a guy like, DeAndre Bembry even. I think Carter's probably a better player than Bembry and Huerter. Right now, if you're trying to win games or you're trying to sort of establish that winning culture, I guess, as you want to say, at the beginning of the year, and sort of show that, even though Kevin Huerter, you were the 19th overall pick, but you're not going to just walk right into the rotation. You've got to beat out Vince Carter to get there. DeAndre Bembry, if you want to stick around in the NBA, you've got to beat out Vince Carter. Daniel Hamilton, same thing. Tyler Dorsey, the same way. All of these guys. You would play Carter if you were trying to establish that kind of culture. If he wants that, obviously, like you said, there's no way for us to know on the outside, how exactly that's going to work out. I don't think he's going to be part of the rotation. Maybe for the first month while Huerter is sort of getting into the scheme of things, into the swing of things, if you know, or if there's an injury up front, or if there's some sort of reason that, that Carter can sort of slot right in. But, you know, at the very beginning of the season, they will also have the services of Adams and Poitras, who, you know, who, because the G League season won't start immediately. So Poitras, you know, should be ahead of Carter in that rotation, just based, not based on merit, but based on, you know, the young guys we want to play as young as we can to try to develop these guys. So it's really tough to say from the outside whether Carter is going to be a significant part of the rotation at the beginning, a significant part of the rotation all year, or if he's going to, like I said, log more minutes for NBA TV than the Hawks.
Yeah, it's very, very well said. All right, so we talked about Herter, and I think we're on the same page that, you know, Herter is the most important piece on this bench in terms of guys in the future. He's the guy they just took, they just drafted with a top 20 pick. He may not be great right away because he's a rookie, but, you know, he's his shooting is definitely valuable. They clearly like him quite a bit. They drafted him, and as a result of that, it makes all the sense in the world to play him this year. I've gotten yelled at before when I said there's a possibility that either Herter or Spellman or both plays in Erie at some point in the season. I stand by that only because they have all these options, and if they just feel like these guys are struggling or they're not ready to go, it makes some sense to send them down to Erie. But, you know, coming into the year, if Herter's ready to go, I do think that there's a lot of reason to play him, because even if there are guys who might be a little bit better than him right away, he's the guy that matters more than the rest of them, honestly, in terms of the future.
Yeah, Herter matters as the wing off the bench. Like, he's the guy that they're trying to develop. He's the guy they should be trying to develop long term. Whether that means he plays in Erie a little bit in October, November, December, you know, I think that might be good for him, especially if they're going the route with Vince Carter and Justin Anderson as the backup wings, or DeAndre Bembry finally is able to sort of, you know, play his way into rotation minutes, or, you know, somehow Tyler Dorsey is an NBA level player, or even Daniel Hamilton is solid. You know, there's so many wings on the bench that they don't want Herter to just sit there or play, you know, 6 minutes a night as the fifth wing. If Herter, you know, isn't getting consistent minutes as off the bench, then sending him to Erie along with Spellman in the same sort of vein would make sense, you know, just to get them some more reps at a professional level.
Yeah, so that's something to keep an eye on. I think we're on the same page with Herter. Just play him if he's capable of playing effectively or even semi-effectively and not going to hurt his development, then go ahead and throw him out there, because he is definitely a big part of the future. All right, let's talk about the rest of the guys, because there are still a lot more guys that we haven't mentioned on the wing. You have this group of Bembry, you have Daniel Hamilton, you have Tyler Dorsey. Those guys are all interesting. The fact that Dorsey especially is basically a one-position player, he's only a shooting guard, more of that instant offense kind of piece off the bench. Bembry, obviously they haven't invested been in, but it was a previous regime when they drafted him in the first round, and he's really battled injuries. He's definitely more of a defense first player at this point in time, but has this interesting skill set where he theoretically could be this like distributor, secondary ball handler type that's a good athlete, but he just can't stay healthy. And then you have Hamilton, who they gave a guaranteed contract to, and that is a pretty reasonable investment, obviously. So, and he's sort of a guy who has played on the ball and has been like a point four in his G League career, sort of a triple-double kind of guy in the G League, but still someone who isn't relatively proven. So these three guys are kind of battling for probably what I think are going to be the same minutes as they exist. A, do you have a favorite among those three? And B, how do you think the minutes shake out? Because I think on a nightly basis, if everybody's healthy, one of those guys is going to be inactive, if not two of them. So who's that guy going to be too? That's kind of it's interesting because they definitely don't need all three of these guys available if everybody's healthy.
Yeah, if everybody's healthy, you know, probably two of them are inactive, and it's going to be up to that last guy to sort of, you know, show that he can earn the activity, I suppose. And even if he's not playing that much as the 13th guy or the 12th guy on the bench, you know, I think, you know, we'll know a lot more before the end of October, obviously, but with the first 2 weeks of the season, plus the DeAndre Bembry's, you know, player option or team option for the 2019-20 season will be due by October 31st. So Bembry, we'll know whether they think of Bembry as part of the rotation or not. He frankly may not even be on the team at that point. There's a chance that they, you know, they cut him for a guy like Aldridge or Robinson. If they know that they're not going to pick up that option, they can just eat his contract this year and pick up one of those other guys out of camp. It's unlikely, but it's possible that he would be the sacrificial lamb in that situation. I think Bembry is probably the best of those three guys if he's on the floor and if they can, you know, he can can stay healthy. If not, probably Hamilton is the next guy. You know, you and I have talked on and offline about Tyler Dorsey and the way he is just, you know, he's just not an NBA player. It just is what it is with him. There's really no world in which he is somebody who I would trust to play for this team, you know, for this year or next year or really at any point.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's kind of weird that I almost might be higher on him than you, which is hilarious because I've been famously the low guy on Dorsey for a long time. I think the fan base is screaming at us right now as I listen to this about how we're wrong about Dorsey, and that's fine. I mean, he's probably the single player on this team, now that Dennis Schroeder's not on the team anymore, that that I have the biggest disagreement on with the fan base in general. I think there's a lot of people that think Dorsey's like a part of the team moving forward. I just don't see that as a result. But maybe the Hawks are higher, and I'm sure they are higher than we are because they drafted him. You know, Travis Link drafted Tyler Dorsey, and I'm sure they want to see more of him as a result of that. It wouldn't stun me if he was playing real minutes, especially early on in the season, because they clearly like him more than we do. My issue with Dorsey is that he's going to have to make shots. That's the only way he can prove himself as to be an NBA player, is if he really, really makes shots. He's a good rebounder, which definitely does help, but he's a one-position defender, which hurts him when compared to the other guys who could definitely guard multiple spots in Membry and Hamilton. And he's not big enough to like kind of do what Herter could do, maybe just be this like combo wing kind of guy. Dorsey's like a 6'3", 6'4", pure offense, backup shooting guard. And there's a place for that kind of guy in the league, but you have to be really, really good at it, and he's not proven to be that so far. So I can already hear the backlash to what we're saying, but at the same time, I do think he is definitely in this class with Hamilton and Bembry, not part of the established rotation, in my opinion. Now, again, Lloyd Pierce may disagree. Travis Schlenk almost certainly does because he's the one that drafted him. But we're definitely low on him. We'll see what happens in the future. I think we are closer to the national consensus on Dorsey. I think both of us have talked to enough people that have seen Dorsey play in Summer League and other places where most people outside of Atlanta don't really see it with Tyler Dorsey, but the fan base really does. And, of course, he was a draft pick of the Hawks in this regime, so he'll get some preferential treatment there. So we'll see what happens. I don't think it would be a surprise to either of us, including you. Maybe I'm wrong about this. If Dorsey was playing, because that doesn't mean that we agree with it, but he still might be in rotation because he's been in the rotation before and he's the incumbent guy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess he would be the incumbent guy in that rotation technically, even if he doesn't deserve it. I think he does get the preferential treatment of being a Travis Schlenk draft pick one way or the other. Just a small prediction here that Tyler Dorsey, well, this is the last year of Tyler Dorsey in the NBA. Unless he really breaks out, but I don't see him doing that. I don't think that, you know, come this time next year when Tyler Dorsey becomes a free agent, they're not going to, you know, extend him a qualifying offer to give him more than the minimum next year. And then he's going to be unrestricted and he'll be in Greece, you know, raining threes in whatever league the Greeks play in. I don't know what their national league is, but Dorsey's not an NBA player, and so he's not going to – I mean, he may get minutes on this terrible Hawks team this year, and he may be awful in those minutes. He may be good, and there's a possibility that he's in the NBA next year, but I will predict right now that he is not – a year from now, he's not an NBA player.
There you go. You heard it here from Jeff. Please direct all hate mail to at JG Siegel on Twitter. All right. I guess that's probably a good place to leave the wings. I'm going to come back at the end and ask you like one overarching question. But before we get to that, I do want to take a minute to tell everybody to subscribe to the podcast. There's a handy dandy tool. You might have noticed recently on my Twitter feed and on the Locked On Hawks Twitter feed, I've been posting the links directly to Megaphone, which is our hosting platform. If you click on that, there's the option to subscribe to the podcast on a variety of platforms all in that one window, whether it be Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. All those places can be found in that one spot. So please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts. We should be there. If we're not there, please let me know and we'll fix that. I promise. But take a minute, leave 5-star feedback if you like the podcast. Or if you don't like the podcast, let me know how we can fix it. Tell me to talk slower. I know that's one of the big themes. And I try my best, I promise. But and hopefully I've been improving. But alas, here we are. But thank you for everybody that's already subscribed to the podcast. But please tell your friends. Keep listening as the season comes on. And we'll be going back to 5 days a week once the season starts, which will be a lot of fun for everybody. So please stay tuned for that and subscribe to all that fun stuff. And I really appreciate it, everybody that's already done that so far. All right, Jeff, we can get into point guard now, which is a little bit more straight ahead than the rest of the rotation, I will say. We kind of know it's going to be Trae Young and Jeremy Lin in some form or fashion. I guess the one main question, I guess, is who starts? I don't really necessarily care as much about this as a lot of people do, but who do you think starts opening night at point guard?
I'm going to go with Jeremy Lin. I think he's the better player. I think they're trying to maybe take the onus off of Trae Young. This is one of those situations that's the opposite of how I felt about bringing a guy like Kevin Huerter or Omari Spellman in as a bench wing slash big. You know, I think when you have an investment in a draft pick, you want to at least let them play early on and just see what you have in them. And obviously, if they are not able to do it, then you can go in a different direction. But at the very beginning, you have to at least have them sort of in the rotation just to see, how they're getting acclimated to the league. That said, you don't necessarily, just because a guy was a first-round draft pick, that doesn't mean that he just walks right into the starting spot, especially if there are better players in front of them. I don't think, like a guy like Kevin Huerter, like we talked about, he's not walking into the starting lineup over Bazemore and Prince, even though they've got more of an investment, especially in Huerter, over a guy like Bazemore, who is probably, this year, next year, and then he's going to be a free agent. You can make the argument that they've got more of an investment in Huerter than Bazemore, but he's not going to walk into the starting lineup because Bazemore's a better player. Same thing here with Trae Young and Jeremy Lin. I think, assuming, of course, that Lin is healthy and is able to play on day one and is able to play at the level that we're sort of accustomed to from Jeremy Lin, he's the better player, and he doesn't, and he's, I think, significantly the better player. And so Trae Young doesn't just get to walk into the starting lineup like that. Young will come off the bench at the beginning of the year, see how it goes. Those guys will play together a lot since both guys can shoot. Since Lin is a little bit bigger, he can sort of play up a position, defend two guards a little bit. Obviously Trae Young's going to be a dumpster fire on defense no matter who you play him against. So that's not, I guess they shouldn't be worried about defense when Trae Young's in the game. So if you want to go with, a lineup like Young and Lin together with John Collins at the five and Torian Prince at the four, maybe Bazemore or Huerter, if you really just go all in on the offensive side, because it's not going to happen defensively with Young on the floor unless you can really find a place to hide him against other teams that are playing two-point guard lineups. That's possible, but it's going to be few and far between where Young is going to be, hideable on defense. So, for me, I think it's going to be Jeremy Lin on day one. It's one of those situations where you don't just hand the keys to Young right away. And, we'll see how Young plays off the bench, how those guys play together. I expect to see quite a bit of them together, and expect to see, each of them sort of taking turns handling the ball, since both guys can space the floor. Both guys can attack closeouts. Both guys can pretty much do, everything that the other guy can do. Obviously, they're a little bit different athletically and with their handle and stuff like that. But, Lin can make up for a lot of his deficiencies with just being smarter and more skilled, I think, at this point in his career.
Yeah, this is going to be the rare time when you and I disagree. I think they're going to go with Trae Young on opening night. I could be wrong about that. That's me reading the tea leaves a little bit and doing my own projection. I think if it was me, this is the rare spot, I think, where I would go with the player I don't think is better. I agree with you 100% that Jeremy Lin, at this moment, provided he is healthy and the same player that he was, a year ago, 2 years ago, is better than Trae Young. That's just my lean. I know Trae Young is more talented. I get all that. Jeremy Lin is an established, starting level point guard in the NBA. Trae Young is a rookie, and the lion's share of rookies are bad. I will keep saying that until the cows come home. I promise. I know people are already annoyed by that, but I'm going to keep saying it. Jeremy Lin is probably better than Trae Young. With that said, I think Young is the caliber of prospect and the guy that you have such an investment in that it probably does make some sense to go ahead and throw him to the wolves a little bit. And I do think, weirdly, because Lin can play shooting guard and credibly defend a little bit bigger guys, it almost makes more sense to bring him off the bench because you can kind of bring him in first, play those guys a little bit together, and have Young only be playing point guard. And because you don't have another backup point guard either. It's like you only have these two guys. And I do want to ask you what happens if one of them gets hurt at some point in time. But going back to the main question, it wouldn't surprise me if they started Jeremy Lin. I think it will stun some people. I think there's a lot of Hawks fans that will be like floored if they start Jeremy Lin opening night because Trae Young is the second coming. I would start Trae Young, and I think the Hawks are going to start Trae Young for political reasons as well as upside and developmental reasons. It's very interesting to me. I also don't care about it as much as everybody else does, I don't think, just because they're both going to play a lot. As you mentioned, they're going to play together, I think, a pretty decent amount. I mean, you got to fill 48 point guard minutes, and if these guys are healthy, both they're gonna the two of them are going to combine for 40 all 48 at point guard, and then you'll probably see how many minutes do you think that Jeremy Lin and Trae Young play together if everybody's healthy? Do they play 10 minutes a game together? Is that too much? Too little?
I'm not sure. That might be a little bit too much. I had it at like 6 minutes together. You know, just
that's probably reasonable. Yeah, you're talking about
a
like
in the first and third quarters, but that's about it.
You're talking about, I mean, if you assume 6 minutes a game, 6-7 minutes, that's 54 minutes of game combined between the two. That feels a little bit low to me, but it also doesn't feel insane, especially early on when Trae Young is still getting his feet wet. I think by the end of the year, you'll probably see Trae Young playing 30 minutes a game just because that's what happens with top five picks on teams that are bad. You're going to want to have him play more and more and be exposed to more and more. But yeah, I mean, it's sort of a rough spot because I kind of wish they could play together a little bit more because Jeremy Lin is better than, I mean, at this moment, if you assume Jeremy Lin was a shooting guard, is he the second best shooting guard on the roster behind Kent Bazemore?
I think
he might be.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And it's not even 100% clear that, well, yeah, okay, he's worse than Bazemore, but he's not.
He is. At shooting guard, he is.
At the shooting guard position, he would be worse than Bazemore, but he's closer. He's closer to Bazemore than he is the rest of the crew below him.
Yeah, so, I mean, all that to say, I kind of wish they had another third point guard so they didn't have to worry about that this much, because right now there's kind of a cap on how much you can play those guys together because they're the only two point guards on the roster. I mean, I know they're going to have Jalen Adams available a little bit because as you mentioned before, you have the two-way guys available before the season starts and after, and then the 45 days in between. But Jalen Adams is a rookie who was undrafted for a reason. I do like Jalen Adams quite a bit, but I don't think you can like plan on using him unless you have to in an NBA game right now. So it's a situation where I kind of almost want to play Lin and Young more than they'll be able to, but at a minimum, those guys are going to play 20 minutes plus a night each, and he'll see enough of them, and hopefully Lin stays healthy because I think he's good at basketball when he's healthy. I just think if I had to guess right now, I'll guess that they start Trae Young, and I'm actually okay with that, even with the acknowledgement that I agree with you that Lin is a better player at this moment.
Yeah, I think for every reason that has nothing to do with actual right now on court production, they will start Trae Young. They have more of an investment in him. He, you know, obviously they made the big trade to get him. They're opening the new building. He is probably he's the most famous rookie coming in right now.
He's the most famous rookie in my opinion. I've said that before and got yelled at, but I will stick to it. And he's also the face of the franchise at the moment.
Yeah, he's the most famous in America, which is what they care about, because this is where the TV ratings are. This is where the fans come from. You know, people aren't flying over from Europe to watch the Hawks. Even if Luka Doncic was on this team, Trae Young is the most famous for the audience that the Hawks are trying to attract to watch the games and to come to the arena. He's the guy, you know. And now it does seem, for that reason, he probably will be the starting point guard. I would predict that he will be the starting point guard. I think he will play more minutes than Jeremy Lin, all season. He should probably start as many games as he's healthy to start. It's not what I would do in literally just a basketball context, but there's obviously more to it than just the basketball context.
Absolutely, and that's the case with Herter and Spellman as well. It's kind of this is obviously the more pronounced situation where you have Young as a top five guy that they made the huge trade for, etc. He's obviously a better prospect than those guys, but there's similar factors going in with Herter and Spellman, just not necessarily with fan interest. That's more developmental, but there's always different factors on a rebuilding team than there would be for a team that was trying to win right now. The only other question I have at point guard is I kind of lean into it earlier, but what happens if you get a 10 game injury to Trae Young or Jeremy Lin? How do they fill these minutes? Obviously that you would bump up the other guy who was not injured to, you know, 32, 35 minutes a game, but you still have 15 minutes or so to fill at point guard. And I assume they would call Jalen Adams up from the G League during that time. But again, Jalen Adams is a undrafted rookie. How else will they fill those minutes? You have Daniel Hamilton, you have Kent Bazemore. I guess maybe Bembry and Dorsey have both sort of faked play in there in the past. What would be your primary way to fill point guard minutes if you got an injury to one of those two point guards?
I mean, I think in for a short-term injury, which, you know, like 10 games, I think Jalen Adams is, that's what they have him for. That's the whole point of the two-way contracts, is that he can come in and play, you know, just a little bit, you know, play the, you know, 13, 15 minutes a game off the bench just to fill time, just to, so that the other guy can, you know, can rest up a little bit. I think that's what I would do with it, with that spot. That's what I think they'll do with that spot as soon as, you know, if somebody goes down, if somebody goes down for longer, like if we see a half season injury or a full season, you know, injury for one of these guys, then we, you know, then I think they start to think about who at the back end of the roster can they send home, you know, who can be cut to sign another point guard, somebody who, you know, there's a lot of veteran point guards who are just sort of sitting out there in the ether unsigned, you know, a guy like Ty Lawson or Jameer Nelson or Ramon Sessions or Jarrett Jack. There's a ton of veteran point guards who can come in and play, you know, that kind of role if there's, you know, a long-term injury, you know, especially for a guy like Lynn, who has had some issues with that in the past and is obviously coming back from an injury. You know, Trae Young is not the biggest guy in the world. There's possibility, you know, obviously nobody wants to predict injuries and you don't, you know, you hope you don't have to plan for them, but you do have to sort of think about long-term, what, you know, is the, if there's a long-term injury, you know, where do they want to go? I think for a short-term injury, Adams makes the most sense. That's what they have him for, whether he's the guy with the ball in his hands the whole time or whether they have, you know, Kent Bazemore take a little bit more of the creative responsibilities. Even a guy like Taurean Prince has a little bit of that. You know, John Collins, you can sort of throw the ball to and he can just go get a bucket. You know, they would struggle a little bit offensively without a real point guard on the floor. And Adams at this point in his career just, you know, doesn't really qualify as a real point guard. You know, it would be tough. And the offense would certainly, you know, take a dive, and there would be lineups where Adams wouldn't play, you know, especially if he doesn't, you know, shine at the beginning of the year. You could see a Bazemore at point guard lineup because Bazemore can guard opposing point guards, and then you just sort of have this more free-flowing offense where everybody gets to touch the ball, where there's multiple playmakers in a guy like Bazemore, Prince a little bit as more of a scoring secondary playmaker, Collins the same way. You get Herter in there hopefully, and he can show something as a secondary playmaker. You know, a guy like Spellman is supposed to have some playmaking ability, so you really sort of patchwork the point guard responsibilities across four or five guys who can all handle the ball and pass the ball, and it's more of a more democratic offense, a more Budenholzer-like offense, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with Adams being the short-term plug-and-play guy. I do think somewhere in my mind, I keep thinking that the reason, or at least one of the reasons that they signed Daniel Hamilton was to be sort of an emergency point guard. I think they see him as a potential of that. I've not been told that by anyone with the Hawks, so that's just me assuming. But the timing of that signing was always weird to me, and the fact that they guaranteed him was kind of weird to me. I think that might be part of the reason, is that they might see him as a third point guard option, sort of a break glass in case of emergency kind of guy. But I'm with you. Like, I do think, short of signing someone else that's not already on the roster, Bazemore would be a primary option. Like, it wouldn't be always playing the point guard spot, but I think you would want to tinker with rotation to have Bazemore be on the floor with whoever that you want to use, whether it be Hamilton, whether it be Adams, because Bazemore has some experience kind of running the show and also playing defense at point guard. But I don't want to go too deep down this rabbit. Hopefully it doesn't matter. But it's just sort of the question that we've gotten a lot of times because of the fact that the Hawks only have two point guards, and that's the one spot on the roster where there's like an obvious sort of weirdness if there's an injury, because the depth just isn't there. Okay, before we wrap up out of here, I do want to ask you, opening night, we assume everyone is healthy on the roster. Who are the two inactive players?
All right. So sort of a reverse of everything that we've been talking about. Who are the guys who are
actual flat inactives? And I mean, let's just say, like, no surprises, because I remember the night that they announced that Tim Hardaway Jr. was inactive right after he was traded for a first round pick, and everyone almost died, including me. I almost fell on the floor. Like, we thought Bud was kidding at the pregame availability when he indicated that Hardaway was inactive, and we had to, like, kind of go back and, like, make sure he was serious. So nothing like that. Like, it's not going to be like, you know, Taurean Prince. But so no surprises. Who do you think will not be active that first game within reason?
I think if I were to predict what the Hawks will do, I'm going to go
give me the prediction, and then what you would do. I know they'll be different.
Yes, the prediction, of course, is that that Dorsey is in there because they've got yes. they seem to like him. So I think I would go with Hamilton and Bembry as the two guys who are inactive as my prediction. Of course, Dorsey would be absolutely inactive for me, along with. Whether it's Hamilton or Bembry, I think really, really depends on how preseason goes.
I agree.
And so I'm going to go with Hamilton for now as the inactive guy, just because Bembry has a little bit more, just more experience. I'm more just hoping that Bembry can stay healthy because I like what he can bring to the table when he's healthy. So I would predict that Bembry would be active in that case and that Hamilton and Dorsey would be out. But, I think the overarching thing between these three guys is that, like we talked about earlier, only one of them likely is going to be active on any given night, and it's going to be tough to earn that activity spot, essentially.
I do think, prediction wise, either Hamilton or Bembry will be inactive. I'm pretty sure about that. I would lean Hamilton. I'd be pretty surprised if he was active, frankly. But as you mentioned, preseason is going to be very, very significant with both of those guys, especially Bembry, because, it's important to always emphasize that Travis Schlenk did not draft DeAndre Bembry. There's no, I know they have the option decision as well looming on him, but there's no, loyalty in the way that you might think there would be for a first-round pick there. So I will say Hamilton. I will predict that it's a big. Either Plumlee or Spellman, provided Dedmon is healthy. If we're assuming everybody's healthy, I will predict that they go with only four bigs active in that first game. Not that it really matters all that much, because usually guys are not, playing 13 guys in the same game. But I will say Hamilton, and how about a curveball, and I'll say Amari Spellman. That's my prediction. That is not what I would do. I would do Plumlee and Hamilton. Or Plumlee and Dorsey, you choose one of those two. But I think it's going to be a curveball, and I think you might see Amari Spellman come along slowly. That's just a guess.
I think the one guy that neither one of us mentioned there is Vince Carter. Depending on, of course, again,
I just would be surprised if he's inactive game one after he's. I mean, maybe that would definitely send a message that he's not going to play much if he's inactive game one.
That would be nice to know if he were. If he's inactive on the first game, then we know, all right, he's here to be a broadcaster.
That wouldn't be a huge surprise to me. I just would. That will tell us a lot, I will say.
Yeah, I don't expect it. I would expect he's closer to the rotation than a guy like Miles Plumlee.
I was going to say, I think Carter is more likely to play rotation minutes in game one than he is to be inactive.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we'll see on that. It'll be very interesting to see. Okay, back to the top end of the team. I know we've not spent a ton of time talking about the starters for a reason. We talk about those guys all the time. But somebody asked me this question, I guess it was last week or maybe 2 weeks ago. Who leads this team in minutes per game, I guess, is probably the best way to do it this year. I have my answer, but what would your answer be to who leads the team in minutes?
Taurean Prince, I think, is not – it's pretty clearly, I think, my answer there. Not just total minutes, but minutes per game. I just definitely in total minutes, because Prince has been pretty durable over the course of his first 2 years. I expect him to – he's still at this point, even though they do have more wings, he's still the most indispensable wing that they have based on his size, based on his true, ability to sort of split time between the three and the four. Obviously, he didn't do a ton of that, but just having the size to be able to do that, he's the true guy. When I went through and sort of slotted, I try to slot a lineup for every 3 minute stretch across the game. He ended up with 36 minutes. Maybe that's a little bit high of what he would do, but, he, John Collins, and Kent Bazemore were the only guys who cracked 30 for my rotation, and I think Prince is the guy who's going to play the most minutes this year.
Yeah, those are the three candidates. Barring injury, for instance, if Jeremy Lin got hurt, Trae Young might be the answer. But given a healthy roster, the three candidates are the guys you mentioned. It's Prince, Bazemore, and Collins. I think Prince is the most likely answer, so I'm with you on that. It would not blow me away if Collins led the team in minutes, only because if you assume that he's the primary four and also plays some five, that's the question that I would have, is how much five is he going to play? I would be certainly playing him at the five because I think he's better at the five, But if they're willing to play him at the five, he might challenge Prince for that. But you also signed Alex Len, so I'm not sure that usually – that probably doesn't, I guess, foretell a huge role of Collins playing the five because they gave real money to Alex Len for 2 years. So, yeah, I think Prince is the right answer. Bazemore would be the other guy, but I think there's enough guys now. Same rule applies. If you lose a point guard or if you lose, you know, somebody else, maybe it's Bazemore because that way he shines over. But Prince led the team in minutes by over 400 last year. Part of that was because of injuries. As you mentioned, he was very durable. But even on a per-game basis, he finished second to Schroeder last year in minutes played and was comfortably playing more than Bazemore. And I think you would be hard-pressed to find a coach that likes Kent Bazemore more than Mike Budenholzer did. So I think you're going to see Prince lead the team in minutes. I'm with you on that. I just wanted to at least answer that. I can't remember who asked me, but so my apologies on that. But I wanted to at least answer that question. And I think I was pretty sure that you and I were going to agree, and we do.
Yeah, I think Torian Prince is just he's the guy who, you know, doesn't have a direct sort of replacement. Like even a guy like Bazemore, you know, Kevin Huerter is sort of what they, you know, they want Kevin Huerter to be Kent Bazemore and a better version, a better shooting, better playmaking version of Kent Bazemore. You know, whereas there's really, you know, Justin Anderson might get in there, but they don't have a long-term investment in him, and he's just not quite big enough to play the Torian Prince role. There's really nobody, you know, down there, you know, maybe Vince Carter, but again, like, he's not a long-term guy. Torian Prince is the guy who stands out as the one who doesn't necessarily have a great replacement, doesn't have somebody they're really invested in behind him, and somebody who can shoulder the load to play, you know, 34 minutes a night for 82 games.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the fact that it's at least a possibility now that Prince plays him four as well would even increase his value. And, you know, offensively, you can't really replace what he's going to be able to bring at that spot on this team. It'll be interesting to see how he develops. And hopefully he plays defense this year after
a 1-year
break.
It'd be great if he would try on that side.
Yeah, it would be nice. He has the tools to do that, and that'd be a lot of fun. So, all right, Jeff, we'll have plenty more time to talk about, like, the guys who probably matter a little bit more. But I figured nobody better to go deep on the roster and the rotation than you. So I really appreciate you coming on, my friend. Please plug yourself and everything you got going on. You still have a very, very useful website people need to be checking out, as well as following you on Twitter. So please plug yourself liberally.
You can follow me on Twitter at JG Siegel. Direct all your Tyler Dorsey hate toward me, away from Brad. Brad loves him compared to me. I don't think he's an NBA player, so you can talk to me about that. You can find Hawks stuff on Peachtree Hoops, Cavs stuff on Fear of the Sword, Blazers stuff on Blazers Edge, business, like the business side of basketball, for Forbes.com. I'm on Uproxx Dime magazine as well, twice a month, for some X's and O's stuff. I do some X's and O's and business and salary cap stuff for my own site, Early Bird Rights. There's more coming to Early Bird Rights in the very near future before the start of the year, so keep your eyes open for that. And then, yeah, so I think that's everything I've got going on. You can follow the B-Ball Index if you're interested in that. That's coming out pretty soon. I'm not going to be writing for them, but I'm involved in sort of the back end side of that stuff. So if you're interested in sort of a more analytics based basketball writing and basketball analysis, then that will be coming soon as well.
Yeah, please check out Jeff's stuff. He does fantastic work, and he's probably the most frequent guest of this podcast. So he'll be back very, very soon. Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again very, very shortly.
Thanks for having me.
As for everybody else, again, please subscribe to the podcast. We are nearing the season, about a week and a half left before Media Day, and we'll kind of blow it out from that point forward. So please stay tuned for all that, and we'll see you guys next week.